Welcome to the GIST podcast. Web 2.0 applications are making it easier for librarians to share their library catalogue records for reuse, but this comes with a new raft of legal and contractual issues. JISC has just published guidance for librarians to help them navigate these challenges, so JISC's Nicola Yeale spoke to Curtis and Cartwright's Claire Davies and Max Hammond, who carried out the research for the guidance, to see what librarians should be looking for.
JISC has just published some guidance surrounding the sharing and reuse of catalogue records. Why has this become more of an issue for libraries?
In terms of sharing and reusing catalogue records, it's something that libraries have done for many years. It's standard practice. There's always been a similar situation, but where there were grey areas now, they're becoming more prominent because there were very limited things that librarians could do with their records. Previously, upload them to COPAC, RL UK. In terms of the current world, digitally networked world, Web 2, shared services, they're all opening up new possibilities for sharing and reuse of catalogue records. And these are uses that haven't really been defined and suppliers may not be perhaps aware of, comfortable of, in terms of how libraries are now using them or could potentially use them. So the issues are not really any different, but they are becoming more highlighted because of these additional ways in which you can use records.
Do you have anything to add, Max?
Okay, I think the issues have always been here. There's always been an ecosystem where you've got things like COPAC or other union catalogues of the British Library who are transferring records and helping libraries. And libraries have sent each other records. That environment's always existed. I think there's a feeling that things are changing because of the lead to shared services, but also because of new things like Biblios or like Library Thing, which are providing different places for people to share information about books. That's sometimes bringing questions to the forefront of librarians especially, which haven't been considered before. I think it's not necessarily new situations. Some of the uses are new, some of them are just different ways of doing the same stuff, but the same stuff has been accepted and this is new, so it's making people think about it.
You've mentioned Biblios. Can you give us some other examples of new ways in which librarians might help people share and reuse the catalogue records?
Well, Biblios is one example. There's Library Thing is a way of cataloguing. We took it from the approach of coming up with use cases, some of which are realistic now. So Biblios is an obvious thing. Some of which people are probably already doing but may not have considered what the implications are. So making your OPAC available to a search engine. Are you making catalogue records available? Questions. Or providing a way of recovering records, for example, is a protocol called VID3950, which librarians will be aware of. If you make that open, who is able to access that? Everybody? Do you care? And there's also a whole new scope of use, which is some of what Web 2 is about, the kind of large-scale analysis of user behavior and also of catalog information. So most of the user behavior doesn't depend on catalog records, but you could constitute a service that did. So we did. One of our use cases is about processing catalogue records, catalogue information. So it's the bibliographic records, also the holdings record, and some of the circulation data. I think what we're trying to get at with these use cases is that there are a bunch of specific things you do, but they probably come into a number of general classes. So you use records, you make records available to other people. Sometimes you have a contractual relationship to supply records to people. And that you have to see any potential service you develop on its own basis, essentially.
So what sort of legal issues are raised by sharing and reusing library records in this way?
Well, I think the legal issues break into two classes. One is perhaps what we thought the project was mostly going to be about, which is legislative issues, so Data Protection Act, potentially copyright, IPR, database rights, the stuff which comes from law. We thought that was going to be where the majority of this project would go. But what it turned out is that there's really much bigger issues in contractual relationships. Regardless of what intellectual property someone who supplies you as a librarian with holds in their records, if you've signed a contract when you've been supplied with those records, that's probably what's going to be restricting you rather than the legislation, the acts that are in place. It's this contract. So most contracts vary. They vary between suppliers. They vary between the same supplier and different institutions. Some of them are very old. Some of these contracts are tied up with other services that are provided. So, for example, if you take your library management system, if you use Talis, it's possible, not in every case, but it's possible that the Talis base, which is one source of bibliographic records, it's possible the contract for the supply of that is tied up into the maintenance contract for your library management system. So the contractual environment is complex and unique, I think would summarise the issues there.
So Claire, do you agree with what Max has said?
Okay, I think that largely in terms of what Max has said is right. We found that the legislative issues are probably less relevant than the contractual issues for librarians, because IP has largely been seen as one of the main stumbling blocks in terms of is there IP in records. And in terms of what we came up with in working with Naomi Korn and Professor Charlotte Wald at Edinburgh, it largely ended up that records are, it won't contain factual information and are not not IP unless they contain things like user-generated content. So that that area is not, is unclear. Whilst for the most part they generally don't contain IP, once you start getting groups of records, they might be covered by database rights and things like that. So as Max said, it really is the contractual part of it that is the key thing, because different suppliers will interpret that in different ways. And as far as we are aware, there have been no legal challenges to institutions within of their use of records. So we can't really provide any further guidance on that. So it really is about looking at contracts and seeing what you can and cannot do with your records.
So it sounds as though these are the kind of issues that librarians may have dealt with originally when they signed contracts with record suppliers, and they maybe now need to go back over those and have a look at what may have come up since then.
Yeah, definitely. The main thing is that these contracts may have been negotiated quite a long while ago, and not necessarily by the same individual that's in post now. They also may have been negotiated by people who perhaps are not experts in this environment. So what we have produced in terms of the website is actually based around a risk management framework. First of all, considering what you actually do in your institution with your records and being able to describe that using clear language, using the glossary that we've produced, breaking down your activities and looking at the record flows. Then the next thing to do is actually looking at what contractual relationships you have with which suppliers and what license clauses you have within those contracts, which might impose restrictions on how they're used. And highlighting really anything that is kind of unclear or perhaps that is not allowable under your contract, and really auditing your compliance and working out how to respond to any issues, whether that might be accepting the risk and adding it to a risk register, doing something about it, talking to suppliers. All the suppliers we spoke to as part of this project, which was quite a large number of different suppliers, are really very proactive. They're not out to stop libraries and then prohibit libraries doing things. They really want libraries to do as much as they possibly can with catalogue records, as long as it doesn't really harm their business model, because they are providing a service. So the first step, I would say, would always be to call those suppliers and see whether you can clarify things, whether they can help, and if not, then they can explain explain why. So there's a number of things libraries can do. And also, I think a key thing is thinking about what future services they might intend to, what future uses they might do with their records, and negotiate contracts which meet their needs for the future as well as right now. And that kind of seems like a lot of work, but it's really, I think, the only way to do it at the moment. And it really is very much about assessing your risk and responding to that risk, raising issues and making sure you address them rather than just putting it under the carpet, I guess.
And when people visit the website, what can they expect?
On the website that we've developed, there's quite a range of information available. There's quite a lot of basic information which covers the legal issues that you might face. And that's covering the contractual and the legislative issues. And based on a lot of interviews that we did with suppliers and based on the experiences of Naomi and Charlotte. And we also have the risk framework really set out in a stepwise manner, 5 steps to really look at auditing your compliance, responding to risks and undertaking further auditing. And there's quite a lot of things which will help you within that as well, in terms of use cases, help with how to sit there and look at your flows of records and be able to describe that. There's example clauses on there for when you're looking through your contracts. There's also exemplar clauses in there for when renegotiating contracts, which you might want to try and work into those contracts if possible. So there's quite a wide range of material available on the website, and there's also a top 10 actions thing which gives summaries so that you can take it away in a nice, easy form.
You've been listening to a JISC podcast. For further information, please visit www.jisc.ac.uk. Thank you.